You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Portland is a baseball town.
Our secretary didn't have anybody on the phone.
There was nobody on the phone. They were just egging me along.
So they brought a little short, chubby guy in with the name Peters and put him in my place and sent me to double A ball.
Two fans, one mission to bring Major League Baseball to Oregon, fueled by Guardian Games and Athletic Field Design. This is the Diamonds and Roses podcast. Without further ado, your hosts, Ben and Dave.
Hello, sports fans. This is Ben back in the Mike Barrett studio.
He let you back in for one more, which is surprising.
I did.
Considering your personal hygiene issues, I really am surprised. But thank you for that, Mike.
I took a shower before I came over.
Okay, your first one of the month. And that's great.
It is. You know, I used, you know, baby wipes.
All right. You're clean enough, I guess, for the studio.
That's called the European shower.
Yeah. Yes.
Hey. It's no a offense, shower European in the
cultural experimentation. That's fine. Yeah,
that's right.
Well, thanks for having us back in the Mike Barrett studio. We appreciate it.
And as always, I'm Ben,
and I'm Dave,
and we have Mike here today on the Diamonds and Roses podcast. We left off last time talking a little bit about Mike's history up to the Blazers and a little bit of the WNBA. So in this episode, we're going to continue talking about Mike's career in the NBA, and then we're going to move on to MLB to PDX. We'll talk a little bit about that with Mike since we're here in his studio. So without further ado, Mike, so we're back. Thanks for joining us once again.
Of course.
Yeah, we had transitioned in talking about kind of the 3 years with the WNBA and, mm-hmm. and some of the people you met, and then how it couldn't be sustained, the league itself, and, mm-hmm. and you kind of left
at least
off
that team. Couldn't,
that couldn't be sustained here, and then you kind of transition to your next opportunities and the next pathways from there. So,
yeah, no, I you know, I look back and once in a while something will, now, you know, with social media, which didn't exist then, but there'll be a Throwback Thursday clip or a, and there was one recently that was, oh, it was a Kobe game. It was me and Steve Jones doing the Blazer game, and he was my first partner, and I listened to it and I hadn't heard, you know, because I wish I had, and I'm gonna have to do something about this someday, but I don't really have that many games that I did, and I did, I think, gosh, if I have to sit and add them up, I don't know how many. I think it's over 1,000, but I don't have really that many. I have a few on DVD, but I don't have a hard drive full of games or anything. But anyway, I was going back and listening and remembering, and a lot of people, you know, Steve Jones was such a hero of mine growing up because I listened to everything Blazers, and I was the kid who.
Between him and Sean Lee and that whole crew.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, yeah. Steve would do, you know, he would do courtside before the games, which was just Steve standing there answering, taking phone calls. And he was so knowledgeable. And I got to be, you know, the time I got to spend with him was so great. I was so young then in the job, and Steve was, you know, hard on me, but but I'm glad he was. He taught me a ton. In my early days in the NBA, on just kind of how to be during a game, how to handle statistics, if I'm using too many numbers, if I'm getting in the weeds on a call or starting to get on the refs. Because Steve, one thing about Steve Jones is he never got on the officials.
Just maintain that objectivity.
He never did. Oh, yeah. Very much objective, which was complete opposite of Mike Rice.
Right.
But they both worked.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And they were both loved by people, by Blazer fans, to be sure. But very, very different. And Steve, when Steve was starting to do the studio show at ABC, and this is kind of, I think, how this happened. Steve was, you know, he was on the number one crew for NBC with Bob Costas and Bill Walton. And so then when the NBA moved to ABC and ESPN, Steve was being asked to do more and more games. So we'd go out on a road trip and he'd take off and he'd go do a few games. And so they started moving Mike Rice over to work with me on TV. And we really clicked. You know, not that Steve and I didn't. It was just different. And Steve was going to be busy and missing games. And I know that it was just kind of one of those things. They just kind of went, you know, God bless you. Go do your national gig.
Right, right.
And we'll just put Rice in this spot. And that was the beginning of, you know, Mike and I were 12 years or whatever together. Yeah. And so, but they've certainly both, both really unique characters and very different broadcasters and very different views on the game. And so there used to be I guess there still is, but it used to be Courtside Monday Night, year-round show, and it was Mike Rice and Steve Jones. But neither one of those guys are broadcasters. You know, they're both analysts. And it was terrible. It was great radio, and it was terrible radio. Because neither one of them knew really how to get into a break, out of a break. Steve kind of did. But they would argue about the silliest things. And then they would go on.
Where you start to lose an audience after too long.
So they kind of brought me in and said, you host this show and kind of be the referee for these guys. And so I'm young at that point. I'm probably early 30s. And for that job, that was pretty young. And basically said, I'm supposed to sit here between Rice at that point, you know, before Mike had joined the Blazers, you know, he was at ESPN. He was doing Big Monday. And, and then Steve, you know, was number one team on NBC. And I'm like, okay, I got to referee this match. Are you kidding me? But it worked. We had a good time on the show. And Mike and I continued to do that show for a long time. And, but the Steve years were great. And the transition to the Mike years were also really interesting. And really when Mike Rice and I started doing games together, because Steve was at the end of still some really good Blazer teams. But then when Mike came is when they kind of rebuilt. So we had a lot to talk about in those days, because when you're down 20 on game one of a 6-game road trip and you don't have a chance to win any of them, you better have some good things to talk about.
Backup material.
Yeah. Anybody can call a good game.
Right.
And I always said that, because those early years with Mike, when you're in a blowout, you had better have done your prep and your storyboards.
Yeah, can't wing it.
Because you got to talk about, you got to make the game interesting. And I think until the very end, even in maybe the second to last year that Mike and I were doing games, we got blown out at Philadelphia. And Philadelphia was not a really good team. And we were smoked. But we had one of the best broadcasts and the most fun we'd had. And I had a lot of people tell me afterwards, there's no reason why I kept that game on at halftime. You knew it was going to be just behind the woodshed the whole game. But you guys were really entertaining and made me want to watch it. You guys just story told and just talked about the road. And a lot of times we wouldn't even call when a basket was made because the game was decided. So those compliments to me were far better than...
It's almost like
you had on a big shot.
You're understanding people as much as you're understanding the game.
That's exactly what it is. And if you can do that, and like, you know, I talked about in the last episode, you know, reaching people across, you know, all different age groups, ethnicities, you know, economic backgrounds, whatever, current conditions. Mm-hmm. If you can reach those people, all kind of give them all something that they can listen to and learn from, people who've been around the game forever and people who are watching their first game. If they're entertained by you and you can keep that in mind that you're talking to all of them at the same time, I think that's what it kind of takes to be successful. And so when I talk to now and then, you know, young guys who want to get into broadcasting or want to take that next step, those are kind of usually the things I talk about. Some of that you can teach and some of that I think you can't.
It's intuitive.
But the prep is important. I mean, I prepped a lot for each game. I mean, I would start building my storyboards, which I probably still have somewhere, you know, big sheet of paper and just little tiny writing all over it. You know, it would take me six, seven hours for each game, and then write my segments of the pregame mm-hmm. show and the open when on camera and all that stuff. It was not like the cameras just went on and you were on the air, and you know, all that stuff was, you know, and I'd use 10% of what I'd prepare, but you better have the
rest
of it.
You have to have a surplus.
Just in case. Sure.
How far did your time frame expand? Because, like, you know, I know doing this, I have a, you know, time frame that I'd like to have, but, like, as far as, like, when you're looking at these games, are you trying to go back, like, historically a significant mm-hmm. period of time, or are you just a short period of time?
Yeah, and you'd use game notes, but then, you know, now the internet, I mean, before it was probably so much more difficult to prepare.
Oh, yeah.
But there a lot of times was a storyline going into a game, and it was probably pretty obvious. But then there was a lot of guys who weren't talked about as much, and you didn't know if they were going to play that night. But you better have their story straight, because their parents are probably watching somewhere
sure.
on League Pass. And we would get those comments, and as Twitter came in and the, you know, later on and everything.
It's funny, you were right at that transition yeah. in terms of social media and the internet.
Yeah.
So that's totally. That's an interesting deal, being a, you know, just kind of the middle, kind of early middle part of your career as that transition.
And the time I got on Twitter, I'm trying to think, I was late to it. And I think Mike and I got on about the same time. It was during the lockout.
Okay.
Because oh, yeah. we had to host, it's kind of a crazy, another side story that isn't probably that interesting, but during the lockout, we, as NBA employees, we could not say a current player's name on a broadcast.
Wow.
Because it was
speaking in code?
Because it was a work stoppage.
Okay.
So we had to go collective on and bargaining do shows, and whatnot, yeah. 2 hour shows every Monday night, just on past, we'd have past Blazer greats on and talk about old game, but we couldn't talk about anything else. It was
no current players.
Yeah, they were the craziest broadcasts. But we were able to do it, and the NBA would send out, you know, warnings to, if you say a name, if you discuss a player, you're going to be fined, and if not fired.
I mean, you're, so you're an employee of the NBA, not an employee of the team, essentially.
Well, essentially. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, it's all the same kind of, you know, but
we were big umbrella of the NBA.
Yeah. Yeah. And they
that's
paid,
interesting.
They paid close attention to what you said. And when Mike would go really sideways on referees, you know, they never really, though. And this is another thing, a myth kind of from those days, is that we were told what to say by the team or by the league about a certain player, positive or negative, or what to avoid and not. We never were. I was never talked to about
what to say. It's not some conspiracy theory.
No, yeah. Uh-uh. And everybody used to think that, you know, oh, you guys are just walking the company line. You were told to say this. We were never told that. I mean, okay. I wouldn't be stupid, you know, and even when everybody said, I was at the tail end of the so-called Jailblazers and even though I loved those guys. I mean, if I saw Zach Randolph today, yeah. I would give him a hug. I mean, he was all those guys. Darius Miles was a terrific guy. He was great to my kids. And so, I mean, if I always kind of approached it like that anyway, I tried to approach it not to be hokey, but with love and just kind of grace for the guys. And I always found that, even the guys that maybe got themselves into trouble or maybe didn't have the best public perception, like a Bonzi Wells, maybe. Mm-hmm. I love Bonzi. And I saw him, gosh, 4 years ago in Indianapolis, and he was so
human beings
terrific.
Are a little more complex yeah. than the media makes them out to be sometimes.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, any yeah. guy who's played ball at the noon ball at the club knows, you know, sometimes you get on the court and you're a different guy than you are off.
Oh, yeah.
And I think these guys, in a lot of ways, were that way. And I was around to where I knew enough of the stories. I knew what was going on, but always had good relationships. And that's another thing, going back to Steve Jones. Steve would never, you know, he never rode the team bus, and he didn't fraternize with the players. He didn't want to have that relationship because he wanted to be able to say things without knowing or not being, not afraid, but not having that distraction, perhaps, of knowing okay. their family. I never could. I got wrapped up in the relationships.
Not that either way is wrong. Yeah. It's just a methodology.
Just different. Yeah. yeah. I mean, it probably kept me from being as objective maybe as Steve was at all times, because I wanted him to win. Because if you start caring about somebody as a person, you want to see him have success.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of times people would say, you're homers. And I said, yeah, I guess, because I want these guys to succeed because I'm with them every day. Who wouldn't want to
right.
succeed?
It has to happen. Yeah. It's right. inevitable.
I think that would be beneficial, having that relationship with them, because they probably feel more comfortable around like you talking during your post game interviews or just off, you know, off the cuff interviews at any point. So I'm assuming that that's probably one of the benefits.
And even guys like when Arvydas Sabonis was here, you know, and Arvydas would always come off like he didn't speak very good English because he didn't like doing interviews. But I had several times with Arvydas long talks and he spoke a lot better English than he came off talking about. And I remember talking to, I used to play golf with Steve Kerr now and then when Steve was here, and we started talking one time and I wrote a story about, it had been written before, but you know, his dad was assassinated. He was in Beirut. He was at American University in Beirut and was killed by terrorists. And so, and I was after 9/11 and I asked Steve if I could do that story on his dad and he said, sure. So there were some really cool things like that, that were a byproduct of the relationship and the trust that you build with the players. So I guess I probably wasn't terribly old school when it came to that, because a lot of those guys didn't do that. But then there were some guys that did too, when you think way back, especially in baseball, so much of the storytelling. I mean, Vin Scully and Mel Allen and these guys, they had relationships with the guys. I wouldn't have known any other way to do it.
Interesting. So I mean, and that, you know, that it's that kind of bringing a humanity to it and just understanding the complexities of people. I think we get caught up and we watch athletes, right? And we sometimes forget that. We forget that they're multifaceted.
And social media is really ugly that way.
Oh, my goodness.
I'd see guys get torn apart, you know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, even now and then, guys that I, you know, Myers Leonard, when he came in the league, I just love the guy. I love him. I love his family.
Seems like a nice guy.
And, you know, and the fans get on him now. And then I understand, but it's like, And I know people don't want to hear this because there's a guy behind that.
Yeah.
You know, there's a human behind that. And I understand. I understand that's not the, you know, and especially maybe with the younger people on social media, it's so much easier to anonymously bash somebody.
Yeah.
And it's just.
That's a culture shift.
It is. Yeah. It really is. And it's kind of an ugly one. And it doesn't happen.
I get it. I'm a high school teacher. I know. Yeah. It's interesting.
And you've got to develop a thick skin. And even when we got on Twitter, when we as in me and Mike and broadcasters, you know, you'd get, after each game, you'd get on the team bus and you'd have a bunch of direct, you know, messages to you or tweets at you, and 95% or 98% of them are good, and then you'd have a couple that would just be like harsh and you know, and it's not supposed to bother you, but everybody, you're not human if you know, even if you do have thick skin, you kind of go, geez, that's ugly. What's going on with that,
like,
person?
Why?
Yeah,
I know you probably deal with some of that today because you see some of the comments like geared towards you or, you know, Craig or some of the other people that are involved with the Diamond Project. It's like, come on, you know, like, really, like, why?
That's kind of the way things are. And you know, I think too, and I don't read a lot of that. If somebody, you know, if I do, and it's not like I'll answer all those questions, especially about the project we're doing now. But sometimes it's ugly just to be ugly. But you know, some of that stuff, I do spend too much time probably on Instagram and Twitter and whatnot. I'm not on Facebook. I was on years ago, but I'm not anymore. But that's kind of my news feed, which shouldn't be the case. I mean, I talk to this about my wife all the time. I stop getting your news from Facebook, but you know,
it's convenient.
Yeah, it is convenient.
Sure.
But I can't think of many times when I spend 15 minutes on Twitter that I think, well, that was 15 minutes well spent, because it really isn't. But if you use it properly, and the way we spread information, and hopefully it's good information now, especially about this project now, as complex as it is, it's a useful tool for us.
Yeah, and let's go back into talking about the project, and let's talk about you know, the great things that you've been doing. I mean, you've been working with the project for about 2 years now. Is that correct?
A little more. Yeah. Craig and I. Yeah, 2.5, probably, maybe a little more than that.
And you guys come a long way since from the beginning to, you know, where we're at right now, where you have stadium renderings out, you have, you know, a location that you're working on, you know, you've got that in contact with Major League Baseball, and the things that you're doing is just really phenomenal. Did you ever vision at the beginning of this, like, you know, you'd be at this point this quickly?
Yeah, what was your realistic vision early on?
Cynical.
Was it?
Because I'd seen it before, and because I came from the media, so I naturally probably was more cynical than I should be. I was all for it. I've been a little more of the realist at times. Craig is very optimistic, and I love that about him. And I now, you know, I went from early on going, well, this will be a great thing to be involved with, but gosh, there's a lot of hurdles. And then I went to, I'd come home and go, gosh, you know, this really, and we came home from our first meeting with Commissioner Manfred in New York, and that's almost 2 years ago. And I kind of thought, you know, I kind of thought we went into that. We were, there's probably, you know, 6, 7, 8 cities going for this. And they, you know, where do we stack up? And I kind of, I came home and said, we're kind of the city and the West Coast city from what I had heard and heard directly from, you know,
chipping away at your cynicism a little
bit. Totally. Yeah, totally. And that kind of has happened all along. And now I'm to the point where this is going to happen. I just don't know when. I mean, I think that, you know, obviously we all want it sooner than later. But it is a complex project with, you know, you mentioned, you know, we did release our preferred site, which is what we say, but it's not our only site. Mm-hmm. And I'll say there's a lot more going on than we can be public with for lots of different reasons.
Sure.
And it's not to be secretive or try to be sneaky. It's just because we have to be mindful of all the relationships and all the partnerships that we currently have, including city government, state government, and then some of the other business partners that we're working with in all of these situations. But I will say that every time I have a meeting or I go into one thinking, oh my gosh, how's this going to go? I walk out going, gosh, that was terrific. Even ones that I think, you know, even like everybody said, oh, you know, you guys got to go deal with the city of Portland. And oh, you're never gonna. And we'd go down, and I'd sit there, and I'd think these are good people, and they want this to happen, and they've been terrific. And it's not easy. And they would be the first to say it's not easy, but it takes some people who realize it's not easy, and just to keep going. And that's what we're gonna do.
Yeah, I just don't think the city of Portland wants to be left at the altar again, and like they were in the early 2000s with the Nationals or the Expos at the time going to Washington. I mean, that was just kind of writing on the wall.
Situation, much different time.
Yeah.
But you know, Portland was different then too. Far different. Portland was different even 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Way different than it is now.
Absolutely.
You know, and that was a situation where you had one team that Major League Baseball had actually absorbed. And so it was a much different scenario. There was really, with that group, that group did some great things, and they were terrific. There wasn't a lot of connectivity to Major League Baseball like we have now. And we're in a very fortunate situation that there, and we've said this publicly, so I can say it without kind of sounding, but the money is not an issue. Mm-hmm. It just isn't. And in fact, we're having to say no a lot more than say yes for where we're at in the project. So then people say, well, what is it then? What's, well, you know, you're trying to parallel track building a ballpark, which is, you know, what we've planned to do would be the biggest development.
Long-term and predictions, you know, long-term and predictions is that's the tricky part.
It would be a massive development.
Sustainability.
The scale the city has never seen before. And then you're doing that along with the challenge of building the ballpark. But we have great architects and designers on that. And then you have your government relations team. And it's funny, when I think back to Craig and I having lunch together and kind of talking about what this might look like to the size of the team that we have now and the different talented people that we have, you know, our chief of staff, John L. Bell, who worked for Senator Merkley. John L. has just been fabulous. And Nathan Naiman has been great with him. And John McIsaac and PR, I could start going on and on and on. Oxley and Associates, and I mean, boy, it just we have so many good and talented people, and we have long conference calls every Tuesday morning, and then we split into different groups during the week and have different meetings and calls, and lots of stuff that just has to be done. But they're great, they're talented, and everybody's all in on this, and that's why I have so much confidence in
that. So the collaboration, people understand their roles and are willing to make some compromises and concessions and work together.
And that's good leadership, and that Craig gets credit for that. Craig was, you know, Craig ran Nike North America, Nike China, and so he's done a lot of this. I there's a lot of meetings we're in, especially early on. Mm-hmm. I don't come from that. You know, I'm not the guy who's going to be able to understand what a land use attorney is saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I kind of understand it, but not really, you know? So there's been times that I'm kind of like,
the legal,
I got to remember what my role is here, and it isn't to figure out, you know, the finances and the government end of things. But like we all go back again to, but I do know people, mm-hmm. and I like to think that I can communicate with people and all different kinds of people. And that's kind of what this is. That's what this whole thing has been about. And I think that my role in this early on too, and the reason why, you know, and we didn't handcraft everything, but to have me involved on the heels of an unpopular decision that was made when Mike and I were relieved of our duties.
Yeah.
At least it attached a familiar face to a project that maybe could look like it was coming from outside. And I think there was some value in that, mm-hmm. for people to go, well, we know him and we kind of hopefully trust him and like him. So if he knows these guys, then maybe we're going to get behind this when maybe we would have looked
street
at
street cred
much more absolutely. Skeptically. Yeah,
absolutely.
So I think that's been one really nice thing that's been, that my role in this has been pretty clear to me. And it doesn't mean that every turn has been easy.
Has your role evolved at all? Or, so?
Oh, it's I've got a meeting tomorrow I'm in that I would not have been in that I've got representing us in, and some of those things that I just wouldn't have known, the nature of a certain kind of business, be it real estate or government, mm-hmm. I've learned.
I was going to say, you're learning a lot.
Yeah. You're building confidence every single day. You're doing this and this. When you were approached with this idea by Craig, did you feel like you needed to jump in and learn more about the history of baseball within the Portland metro area and others, so you can get kind of a feeling and, you know, for what the historical aspect has been, so you can relay that information?
For this,
And we did. And I didn't know all the Vaughn Street Park stories, and mm-hmm. I didn't know about the Portland Rosebuds owned by Abe Saperstein and Jesse Owens. And, you know, I didn't know all these stories. I didn't know. I knew some of them, but I didn't know the whole Portland Mavericks story. I knew a little bit, knew Kirk Russell, and I knew, mm-hmm. you know, so I knew those things, but I didn't understand it like I do now. So it was a lot of late nights, fortunately these days on the internet, not having to go to the library or something. I'd been to Beavers games as a kid, Portland Beavers games. So I'd been up here and, but I didn't understand going all the way back to Vaughn Street Park and when it started out. But now it's, you understand, mm-hmm. The history, and that Portland's a great baseball city, and the Northwest is a great baseball area with deep, deep roots.
I think that gets trivialized. I think it gets minimized, but that's one thing I've actually learned with Ben is how much of a baseball area this is.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Yeah. So, you know, a couple of different things, you know, you had the Portland Pioneers, the early baseball and that connection between Portland, Vancouver and the other mm-hmm. areas locally, and how people were paying to play because it was a hobby to them. And then people would come out to watch these games. And then we go into Vaughn Street, and then the trolley guys built the stadium.
Swigert and Fuller.
Yeah, yeah. So we can get the trolley line around the area. So
and they were competitors.
They were.
Which is the funny thing.
Oh, they yeah.
They came together to up ridership, and it's an amazing story. How they came together to build Vaughn Street Park, and mm-hmm. then the fire that took it out. You know, it's there's some crazy old pictures of Vaughn Street Park packed, you know, where they let people actually sit on the hanging track.
That was pretty amazing.
The knot hole game where the kids are looking through the knot holes in the outfield. Mm-hmm. It's great. I mean, baseball is so great, and there's so much romance. Yeah. And
I remember Jack Dunn talking about, like, climbing up over the thing
and getting caught by
the police or something, sneaking in.
Mr. Dunn.
But then I think everything we learned about, like, Vaughn Street and the early Civic Stadium was that everything burned at that point.
Yeah, a lot of fires.
Because it was I can't remember, the groundskeeper always would keep like sand around the whole park so it could help people like put out fires, because they talked about like the peanut shells, the pieces of paper that were below the bleachers
and smoking cigarettes. In the stands.
Yeah. I mean, matches and cigarette butts
just
and everything.
Putting cigarettes out on cigars, in an all wood ballpark in August. What could go wrong?
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
This will be fine. Yeah.
But, you know, moving forward, you know, knowing this history now and how it can be applied, which is fantastic, and letting people know, like, Portland really is a baseball town. You just got to look back and see the historical aspect of it and see, like, they will come to watch the games. So.
And it's an underserved sports market, period. Mm-hmm. And we see that. And I remember when, you know, when the Timbers came in and were going to go MLS, everybody said, oh, how's that going to work? And right. they're never going to make it. Look at the success story there. Yeah. And look at the Thorns, who would draw over 17,000 a game. The most attended women's professional sport or club in the world. Any sport.
In the world.
Yeah, in the world. Nobody draws like that. And so it's... You know, and it's the largest metro with only one of the big four, leaving out the MLS, only because when the economic studies groups do it, they oftentimes do. Mm-hmm. But it's underserved. And I think we've tried to explain that in the early going with people who were going to come in and invest. We had to explain some of that. So we had to know the story and know a lot of the economic numbers. And we've had a deep, long economic study, which is... wrapping up almost as we speak, which goes really deep into everything you can possibly think of an area's economy to show
demographic analysis and everything
to show that you can support it. And quite frankly, the first wave of that report, we didn't know what it would show. We were in Kansas City at the time, and I was kind of like, we met with the people in front of a whole bunch of others, and I thought, let's hope these numbers come back the way we think they're going to. And they did. They far exceeded what we thought. And they've certainly backed us. And these are people not from here. They're from Texas. And they were able to say, you absolutely could and will support a Major League Baseball team. And they do this enough to where they know. And then they can go on and say, you should have this number of loge boxes. You should have this number of suites. They know exactly what will fit your market because they've done this so many times. So that's where we've gotten a lot of our numbers, and that's what we could continue to talk about.
People wonder where those numbers come from, this speculative, enterprise. So that's interesting, you know, that it's that specific and that strategic and refined now.
Yeah, and we've tried to do that. We've tried to come with, we've tried to think of everything that could be asked and have tried to, we're not going to have all the answers, but we've tried to have as many as we can have. At every turn, and we're going to have to continue to do that. And I think one of the positive things we did early on too, we grabbed the old logo and put it on hats. And when Russell Wilson and Sierra joined the group, we had t-shirts and hats made, but we really just had them made for that event. And then all of a sudden everybody wanted them. And so we said, well, we didn't do this to get in the hat and t-shirt business, but now we got a store,
and a brand. Yeah.
We did that. You know, this was, as we said, and you still could probably say it and be accurate, this has been a movement. And when you can give a movement a logo and a brand and some depth to that brand, it gives it power. Yeah. And I think that's what we've done. I'd like to say it's all been premeditated, but there's been some accidents that have been worked out really, really well. But I also think politically, once you get a groundswell and grassroots effort behind it and momentum. People are showing up and wearing the gear and they're waving these flags, and they're not even a team yet.
Yeah.
Those are constituents, and that shows not only local politicians and state politicians, it shows Major League Baseball. They follow everything.
Optics
and
visibility.
They know exactly what we're up to.
And especially when you had the ballparks deal that you had going on where you're like, hey, how many ballparks can we get? Can we get every single ballpark with somebody with MLB?
Jen Burley, who does our social media, who's been terrific, and she last year said, I'm seeing a lot of our people are taking selfies of themselves with our hat on.
That's cool.
At different ballparks. And I said, I started looking. I said, there's like five or six ballparks on here. And so she lobs out a question. Wonder how many days it would take to get Portland Diamond Project hat in every Major League Baseball park. It took 28 days.
Really?
And every ballpark had Portland Diamond That's Project cool. gear in it.
Huh.
Which is kind of crazy. Wow.
It was interesting to watch this unfold.
No. Yeah, no way. 28 days.
Well, you should have saw this all unfold. Everybody was taking pictures and cool. It was like, oh, we're here again. We're here.
Yeah. And they want to be part of the movement. And I think the biggest thing we fight or the biggest fear I have is if you run into a stretch where, we do this every day. We're working. And everybody says, well, what's going on? I haven't heard anything lately. And it's... That doesn't mean there's not because there's not something
they want to release every week. Right?
We can't, it's just, when we don't want to just start shooting out news to put out news, when we have things to announce, we do, but we continue to.
You're not desperate for that kind of interest,
not at this point.
Yeah.
But we want people to keep the momentum going and keep the belief going and not go, okay, fatigue is setting in. And I don't think that'll be the case. But even for us, though, You want to make sure that fatigue doesn't set in, and you want to continue to pound away, which yeah. we do. We got plenty of fuel in the tank.
Yeah. You guys have made some relationships with local organizations, and one of those happens to be Friends of Baseball. Like, you know, how did that relationship develop? Did they come to the Diamond Project, or you guys go to them and just kind of saying, hey, let's work something out?
We've had lots of discussions with lots of groups. I mean, a lot of people find you. And Nova Newcomer, who is running Friends of Baseball, and Keenan Longcore, who started it.
Nova on the show.
Oh, they're great. Just great people. And honestly, it started when we started. We had the gear with the hats, t-shirts and stuff going. We went, okay, what are we going to, we don't want to profit off this, you know? And so we said, well, let's create a nonprofit organization. And then we decided, kind of looked into that and went, why don't we just partner with one that's already rolling? And so we did with Friends of Baseball. So all of the profits from our gear go to Friends of Baseball.
Very cool.
So cutting them checks now and then is a really nice thing to be able to do.
Yeah, and then you talked about, like, especially with the hats, like, I think the Detroit Tigers reached out to you guys or something.
Fans said that was kind of the same. But then when they understand that we lifted that from 1901,
yeah, that's a long time ago.
We're just using an old P. Yeah. And it's not like it's going to likely be the logo of the team when it gets
for
here.
Now, yeah.
It is the logo of the group trying to bring a team to Portland is what it is.
Separate those two. Yeah, absolutely.
So you have investors, Sierra and Russell Wilson, both individually on their own. And you had talked about how, you know, you were invited by Craig to go up and meet with them in Seattle. What was that, like, enthusiasm that they were showing when you just kind of walked through the door to talk to them about this?
Well, Craig knew Russell from his Nike days. He signed Russell, and he also was around Sierra some. And I had met Russell once, but it was at a Blazer game when he came down one time. But we went up there with a kind of a pitch in mind. And then it was on a summer evening or a spring. I think it was May, maybe. And we went up to his office in Seattle, overlooks the Sound, and it was Mark Rogers, who's his agent, who's a baseball agent, but he happens to have
figured
Russell
he'd have a baseball
NFL.
Agent. Yeah, it figures.
And it was just us four. And we sat down and, I mean, just within moments, and everybody, you know, if you follow Russell at all, you know, he's, you know, man of incredibly strong faith. And so is Mark, his agent. And we started to talk and we weren't 5 minutes in. And Mark said, this is an answer to prayer. And I mean, Craig and I just were like on cloud nine at that point, and we knew Russell was in.
That's cool.
And immediately was just like, what can I do? And they're like that even during the football season at times, you know, he's asking what's going on? What's the update?
He's maintained interest.
And cool. Sierra. And then we thought they were going to come in together. And then Sierra was like, I'm doing my own thing. She knew history of owners and minority owners and female owners, and she had all that. She'd already done her homework, and this is really important to her too.
Yeah.
So they've been terrific.
That's cool. Because if this happens, she would be technically in the small minority of female owners in the league, which is pretty phenomenal. And I know that it's kind of doing a little bit about Russell. He likes to work with inner city youth and shows like enthusiasm on that, the development. And I could see how that really works with the Friends of Baseball aspect and what they're doing. And I know that they're really helping out a lot of
he's amazing in his visits to the children's cancer clinic, and he goes on social with that stuff, and what he does he does so much of that stuff just completely on his own, even during the season. That's just, it's amazing. They don't get much better than that guy. I mean, he's it's never for show for with him. He's the real deal.
So what's it like working with Craig every day?
It's fantastic. I was just in Palm Springs with him, and it was the first time we had both kind of stepped away. And just we played a round of golf one afternoon, and we just were, it was quiet, and we were both able to, and because so often we're either together trying to accomplish something, or we're split, like like right now he's in San Francisco, and I'm here to handle meetings here, so we kind of do that a lot. But this was a chance last week for us to just to hang out and talk away from the noise a little bit. And no, it's great. Our relationship is, I mean, he's a dear friend now, you know. I didn't know him well in the beginning, but I had friends who knew him well. And that's amazing that we weren't friends, because we know so many of the same people. But we both have the best thing in common, and that is we want to do this for the right reasons. And Craig, you know, grew up in Vancouver, went to Washington State, was a baseball guy. Our backgrounds are pretty similar. Mm-hmm. And we want to see this for our region, and we want to see it for our city. And I think that's what drives us. But we are also different enough to where if one guy is strong in one area, then the other guy can
it's complimentary.
Back up a little bit. And if the other guy, you know, then there'll be some events where I can step in and step up and he can step back. And so we balance each other out pretty well. And that's been really, really fun to be a part of. He's been, I mean, tremendous to work with. And, you know, and I, even if something weird were to happen and this were not to continue, it's not going to, but if it were not to, we would remain close friends, because now it's like, you know, this kind of like you've been in trenches together and cool. And want to continue to be in the trenches, but we also are going to be really happy when we're standing someday soon, hopefully, in a ballpark with a Major League Baseball team in Portland.
Yeah, on a that's nice awesome. Spring evening, yes. Nice air.
Midsummer, yeah.
The roof opened up.
No better place in the country with weather in the summer than here.
July, yeah. Some late July.
That's been a shocking stat, too. We had all those sun studies and weather studies. Portland has the sixth least amount of rainfall of any Major League Baseball city during the season.
That's awesome.
You know, we had all those studies on the Mariners have used. I think they've used their roof 12 or 13% of the time since they built the ballpark. We are going to do a roof. Sure. But we've had moments where we've gone, I don't know that we need it. Mm-hmm. But you got April and you got, you know, postseason October and September. And so it's going to need the roof. We've come to that. We kicked around the idea because it is really expensive to do a roof. But mm-hmm. we do need one. So
yeah, in some of the designs, it's all glass from what it looks like, yeah. So you can get a lot of light in, which is great, as opposed to some of the other stadiums where they close it, there's no real light.
Yeah, and you have to also keep in mind most of your games are at night, but in the summer here, it doesn't get dark till 10 o'clock, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's going to be terrific. I mean, I think about the ballpark design. I think about the summer nights in Portland. And I used to do courtside when I was with the Blazers, and I'd walk out in that Rose Quarter area, the Commons, after mm-hmm. the show, and it'd be dead. And I'd think, if I could just walk to a ballpark now and watch a game this evening and sit in the stands. And when we've gone around and traveled for various meetings and have hit some Major League Baseball parks and watched mm-hmm. games, I forget what a family atmosphere it is, and the young kids, and the fact that you can afford a game. I think mm-hmm. the average ticket price is like $42. That's average. So that's taking in suites, VIP, luxury boxes. And that's about half the price of some of the other major sports. And I think that's a major point for us, is we want mm-hmm. there to be a $10 ticket, you know, like a lot of the teams have. We want it to be accessible. Because, you know, honestly, in the NBA, there's not a whole lot of families down low. You might have some up high, but it's just mm-hmm. so, like if you're in New York, and of course it's New York, but it's just, you know, the lower bowl is largely lawyers and stockbrokers. You know, I mean, it's not, mm-hmm. whereas we went back to a Yankees game last year and there's just little kids with their gloves and jerseys and hats everywhere. And it just reminded me of being a kid and how much I love the game and love baseball.
You know, especially with some of these kids and they have their favorite players, and being able to see some of these guys come into town and be able to watch them play. And I think one of the awesome things will be too is like some hometown kids coming back to play playing for the team. Or, you know, you have your guys that went to Oregon State, University of Portland, Linfield, mm-hmm. you know, Washington, you know, U of O, just these other schools around the area that they could come back to the Northwest and other than Seattle and play. But then also, no matter whether you're in the AL or the NL, getting the Mariners to come down to play and having that rivalry, just like, the Timbers have, so...
Yeah, and then like back when Blazers and Sonics had their rivalry, mm-hmm. which I was fortunate enough to be involved with for a long time and watch the fan bases. I mean, I can't imagine how cool that will be when that rivalry, you know, the I-5 rivalry is stoked up in Major mm-hmm. League Baseball. And, you know, you think about the gap between San Francisco and the Bay Area and Seattle, and there not being a Major League team in the middle. Now this just fills such a natural void. And it gives, you know, the MLB Network and baseball another, you know, 10 o'clock Eastern time first pitch, mm-hmm. which they need. And, you know, we look forward again to to getting back and meeting with the commissioner again mm-hmm. and figuring out how this can happen. And yeah. And they know everything we're doing because they follow everything we do. We don't make an announcement without conferring with those guys. And mm-hmm. so we're in close contact with yeah. everybody back there, and they're watching closely. They know what we're doing, and they know that we're trying to do it exactly right. And because of that, you know, we'll come up with some things and say, hey, we'd love to talk about this. We'd love to announce this. What do you mm-hmm. guys think? And sometimes they'll go, maybe not. And so we do. Yeah. But the fact that we're in contact with them and very respectful of the process, while at the same time, a little pressure isn't a bad thing. We're ready. Pot's mm-hmm. boiling. Let's go.
Yeah. One of the things that I was thinking about as, you know, continue to think about this project and everything, like some like nights that you'll have, like, you know, retro nights. Oh, one God. Of the things that would be kind of fun is have like an old PCL night where you have like the Seals, or you have, you know, the old, maybe the old Portland Ducks with the weird looking uniforms, or the old school Portland Beavers. But just
the Lucky Beavers.
Yeah.
Like in the old days. Yeah. They
bringing back some of those old PCL teams.
Uh-huh. And it would be just almost exactly putting the PCL back together. Mm-hmm. And people ask a lot of times, NL or AL, what would you rather? And I never really have a good answer. I don't care. I just want the team.
And I've heard you've always say that, and I was on the impression initially from myself is that why not have an AL? But then as I listen to you more and more, it's like it actually really doesn't matter nowadays, because if you really think about it, you play everybody. Yeah. And, you know, just, you know, I was at an event that you had one time, and they were talking about, you know, even just having another team on the West Coast. Like you could just make the travel much easier, mm-hmm. and you can create more West Coast rivalries mm-hmm. by doing that. And, you know, even Seattle would still have that rivalry. So I think it's pretty amazing what you're doing. I really appreciate what you and Craig and the additional staff is doing for this particular area. I completely hope that baseball does come, and it comes soon. I know a lot of people are like, is it going to be Tampa Bay? Is it going to be Oakland? And I constantly get these questions like nowadays. And I'm like, you know, it's either going to be one of those or it's going to be expansion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll find out. It's just how are the dominoes going to fall? And can, you know, my opinion is, can these two teams, you know, make something happen? Because I'm assuming that the commissioner, you don't have to say anything, but I'm assuming that the commissioner probably has a timeline in his mind, and Major League Baseball probably does too.
Oh, I think it's safe to say they're on the clock.
Yeah.
For sure.
And they're not going to wait around.
Nothing's happening. And yeah, I mean, we're not rooting against them.
No.
It's in our favor that they solve their issues now. So every time we see a piece of positive news, we're like, great, get it mm-hmm. done. But we're not seeing a whole lot right now. But that's where I think we have a good chance is, you know, we've said from the beginning, we want to prepare ourselves to be able to take either. We want to provide baseball with options, be it to help settle a struggling franchise. And if not, then we know that in the collective bargaining agreement is expansion. Mm-hmm. And Rob Manfred was just given a re-up for 5 years with a unanimous mm-hmm. vote. So he's got some power now. And baseball traditionally moves at a glacial pace. Mm-hmm. But Rob's a little different in how he does things. He pushes on things. And you know, even some of the changes to the game they're talking about, and the DH and all these things that you're hearing about, he's a little bit more aggressive than some in the past. And so we're going to rely on that aggressiveness when it comes to, you know, getting the expansion, getting to 32. Because there's a lot of, you know, the more you see NHL expanding, MLS is handing out teams right and left. So
it's happening everywhere. Yeah. So with let's just say relocation, for example. So if there were to be like a relocation, would the team stay where they're at currently until the stadium's built, or would there be some sort of alternate solution into the meantime?
Well, there's lots of different ways you can do it. I mean, you can do an Oakland Raiders situation, which has not been ideal, clearly. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a few lame duck seasons. But yeah, that's something that we have looked into a lot, like in terms of you're talking about perhaps a tentative space or something while the ballpark is getting built, because it does take 3 years to build a ballpark. Mm-hmm. So we've looked into all of that. All those options are open.
Yeah, I can't imagine, like, if you're sitting there knowing that you have this expansion team or you have a real team that's relocating and you're just looking at the stadium view, getting all that excitement. Right. Do you find yourself ever, like, going out to Terminal 2 area, the current known location? I know that you said that you have others, but do you ever find yourself just going out, walking around?
And yeah, I was out there a week and a half ago in an evening night. It was Craig and I and John L. Bell and a couple of other gentlemen, and we were out there walking around and driving around, and I mean, it's just sitting there. It's a big piece of concrete. And we're just going, man, oh man. I mean, you can see the mountain and the sun is starting to go down and it was just perfect. No wind. And it's just, yeah, it just, I mean, no matter where you go in the city, every time we have been on a site, it doesn't take much to get the imagination going. It's like when John Kinsella looks at the cornfield and sees the field appear, you know, yeah, in his imagination, it's almost like that. And it's been easy to do because we want it so badly.
Mm-hmm. And so a couple more questions and we'll let you go. For one of the last questions is, if you could...
Ray Kinsella, not John. John was his dad. Sorry, go ahead. I just started thinking that. I got to get that right. Go ahead.
If you could build a team around a particular player, you know, whether it be past or present, you know, who would it be and why?
Man, there's so much good young talent right now in the league, and you know, you watch a guy like Mookie Betts and all the things he can do. I've been asked that before. I really admire his game. Mm-hmm. I love guys, obviously, because I'm an Oregon State guy. But Michael Conforto is a guy that I love to watch, and you know, when you watch some of these guys, and that's where baseball, I think the physical side is not quite as vital as it is in other sports. You know, like basketball, you're not mm-hmm. going to see a lot of, but when you look at an MVP that is half the size of an Aaron Judge, you know, it's crazy mm-hmm. to look at sometimes. But I don't know. That's a good question. And you look at Otani, you know, and before the surgery, but I mean, being able to hit the way he does and pitch the way he does, mm-hmm. it's amazing how international, you know, we're starting to see more and more of that.
Especially and with Ichiro's retirement and how much that meant to Seattle.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
The highlights from that and his final game were amazing. And I know that there's a push to globalize the game like there is in a lot of the sports. I mean, it's what it means yeah. to Japan, and even we're seeing it in China, and we're seeing it obviously in Korea and other places, and we're mindful of that, and we've had meetings about that and what that would look like, mm-hmm. And trying to be an incubator for Major League Baseball, because there's a lot of teams and a lot of ways that teams have of doing things that are like, no, this is the way we do it. We want to be like, nah, you want to try something, want to test something out, use us.
Yeah,
we'll try it. You know, and that's what Portland and the Northwest is kind of all about.
Yeah.
When you get into the spirit of the people, and what makes Portlanders proud is the, you know, the pioneering nature mm-hmm. of a lot of the people that are here. And so I think we want to kind of reflect that. We do anyway, but we want to share with baseball that if you want to try something funky in a ballpark, or you want to try something different with TV, or if you want to try some different kind of connectivity with other parts of the world, we're ready to go. We're all ears.
Well, I see the team kind of being like the early 2000 Boston Red Sox with the big beards, you know, mm-hmm. Johnny Damon long hair, mm-hmm. Kevin Youkilis just sweating like crazy.
It's like the Mavericks. Portland Mavericks were, you know, that's why that is such a great series on, you know, especially on Netflix. You watch that, and that's just, and it resonated with Portland, mm-hmm. you know, back when Portland was weird then, not as weird as it is now, and everybody was proud mm-hmm. of that, of course.
Yeah.
But we love that. And a lot of people love that name. Mm-hmm. You know, we get a lot of questions about nicknames, and we'll get to all that, but we love the involvement and love the suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you haven't watched that, it's The Battered Bastards of Baseball. It's on Netflix. It's a really great flick, and it is about the single A independent baseball team, the Portland Mavericks, owned by Bing Russell, a famous actor, and his son was Kurt Russell, who was a management and was a DH on the team at the time. But, you know, he played for the team and some other local guys that were here. You know, last question for you. So you're culminating on everything. Like, what's what's been the funnest experience to date for you with this project?
Man, that is hard to narrow down. It's been an interesting ride for me personally that I don't talk a lot about, but you go from life in the NBA and travel, but the love of that team that had been my team as a kid, and, you know, the circumstances that led them to decide to make a change. And as heartbreaking as that was for Mike and I, it starts to make some sense when I can connect the dots now. And that's why I have such a strong belief that this is going to happen, because it just makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I look at it now and I think, okay, I can see why now. I mean, I'm sounding like a spiritual way I'm talking, which is fine because I am. Mm-hmm. But it makes sense to me. It makes sense to me now why that happened. When at times, there have been times when I've scratched my head and wondered why that went the way it did. Mm-hmm. Now to see that we're having a chance and I'm playing a role in this, be it whatever it is, minor, major, or in the middle, it's probably more in the middle than anything. But that I think has been, and that's not a specific answer to your question, but I think for me, that whole part of it, and forget the identity part of it, because people get caught up into that in the way that you're seen by people. It's not that. It's not, and that's not why I like it. Mm-hmm. It's more personal for me. It's more feeling value and bringing value to a project that you believe in. That probably has been the best part of this to this point.
I would say, having listened to everything that you said and kind of where you've been, it's like, you know, a kind of spiritual a little bit myself, where I think everything happens for a reason. And I think that you go in life and you take away things and you learn from things. And it's about how do you apply, like, what you've learned in the past? What do you apply? What are you learning now, and how you can apply that moving forward? And I think that, you know, you totally, like, what you've done from your, you know, playing baseball, learning from your dad, learning how to deal with people, then that helped you move to the next level. And that still's continuing to help you, like, you know, move today, how you're talking to people, how you listen and you take things, you move it. And then your time with the Blazers, and then, you know, what you've learned there, and then the stuff moving forward. So yeah, sorry for being long-winded.
No, it's starting to make me, I laugh because it was starting to make me feel old, but you're right when I start gluing it all together. But I think the biggest thing I say, and I don't certainly always do a good job of this, but just control what you can control. Mm-hmm. And all you really can control is your reaction to an action. And I think that if that is always kept in mind, and I've used that at times talking to groups about our group, in that we control, you know, we try to only control what we can control. Mm-hmm. And that's true, but it's also true personally too. And I think it's a pretty good philosophy for, or at least a way to try to achieve in life, what you want to achieve is to truly just, and that, you know, if I could get it mastered, I probably wouldn't be a very stressed out person, but I work on it every day, just like I think everybody should, but just try and control the reaction to things that you can't control. That's I think the biggest thing that I've learned out of all of this stuff. And like, again, connecting some of the dots, having my belief where it is in this project and with the people I'm working with.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for coming on these two episodes, joining us, and spending a little time. We really, really appreciate it, and we thank you for doing so. So, any closing thoughts?
No, we appreciate you guys. Appreciate everybody out there who's shown support, and you guys have shown so much support, you know, and a lot of people have, and I know it's personal, and there's been a lot of times when I'll be at an event or speaking at an event, or we'll have an event. And there have been, I mean, I'm telling you, it's happened 20 times where somebody's come up and started to talk to me and started to well up with tears thinking about this happening. And it shows me how much it means to people. It makes me feel a lot of responsibility, because we got to make this happen. And after they walk off, it's like, wow, that was a lot of, I'm taking that pressure on, but it's in a good way, because I can feel their passion. Mm-hmm. For the sport. And I think in a certain way, baseball has that. And not to say that all sports, you know, the other sports don't, but baseball has a funny, it gets a funny grip on you. And I think to know that so many people here have that, we're going to do our dangest to see that we can make this dream come true.
Excellent. And one thing I would say is that idea. Food carts, maybe having some food carts in the outfield, whatever.
We got that going, man.
Yeah. All right. Well,
love the ideas.
Yeah. Thank you again. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for this episode. As always, I'm Ben. You know, my partner Dave had to take off, but Mike, thank you for coming on, and we'll leave it at that. Peace out.